Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, guys. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. Tis that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese.
Is that a Russian thing?
It's that easy.
Yeah.
That was Italian. What am I doing?
Italiano.
That's the whiskey and the pierogies.
I'm going to throw a huge special thanks to all our patrons on Patreon, which the current list is, Jess, go ahead.
Stephanie L.
Terry Needleman.
Max Lunig.
Benjamin Lehrer.
Chris O'Kelly.
Lily Ackles. Ackles.
Danielle Renix.
Mackenzie Horner.
And Taryn the Duck.
Who is an actual duck.
It might be an actual duck. We haven't checked up on that. Taryn, tell us if you're an actual duck. They give us a little extra financial support that helps us keep the lights on here at Musicals with Cheese. If you would like to join them in supporting us and get tons of fun perks such as patron-only commentaries, our episodes a day early, and even some free, they're getting some surveys to figure out what we're covering next, so they're getting a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and the commentaries are fantastic, if I do say so myself.
The one where
we just shit on Matthew Broderick for an hour and a half is top-tier content.
Yep, and the one where we're just confused by cats is also great.
All right. You want to do the link this time, Jess?
Yeah, we have an affiliate link. Click it, buy stuff on Amazon, and we get money. All right, let's start the show.
Ooh. Hooray! Isn't it amazing how he turns that on like that? He just has that shill voice.
Yeah. I get it. Two sides to man.
He literally, I have a video chat, he flips his head around.
Oh, he does like a Jekyll and Hyde type scenario.
Yeah, like the back of his head is like an advertising executive.
Oh my god, you just flip your hair back and forth as you go from one to the other.
It's
crazy.
This
is not a dream, my friend. Audible is on TV. Hello, I'm Jesse McAnally.
And I'm Andrew DeWolf.
And welcome to Musicals with Cheese, a podcast where I try to get Andrew to like musical theater. And today, we have a very, very, very special guest.
Oh my goodness, the specialness of this guest is like through the roof, uncontainable.
Through the roof. We have Hugo-nominated writer, editor, and creator Angelina Meehan of many things, but most notably the Lindsay Ellis's content on YouTube, correct?
Yeah, yes, that is absolutely correct. I once was an altar server. That was a notable thing. That's where the bulk of my creative output is right now.
And didn't someone like credit you as like Delaware teen or something?
Yeah, Lindsay was in, they were doing like a retrospective on her career for Wired.com, and they wanted to talk to me to get some perspective as her co-writer and co-editor. And I told them about how we met on fanfiction.net as teenagers, and that I was from Delaware originally, and that ended up translating to a fellow teen and Delaware fanfiction scribe. Which, you know, if you gotta have something on your grave, that's a good way
to. One of your most famous roles, Delaware teen.
Delaware teen, yeah, exactly. It's not loving mother, kind wife, you know, someone who changed the world. I was a Delaware teen. Which, if you are from Delaware, says a lot.
It's a tough life. It's a hard life.
Yeah, and Delaware's you down. That's I guess what I'm most notable for right now. I also do improv around Philadelphia. I do musical improv in particular, but
Oh wow.
Yeah. I don't know if there's like a, I'm sorry, I'm making this about my work. If there's like a section to plug later, I can plug that, but I do musical improv in Philadelphia.
Jeez, this person is so full of themselves.
No. She is wonderful.
Look, and I'm just projecting big Leo energy, okay? Like, that's all I got.
Very true. Yeah.
So, Angelina, you chose what we were covering today, so I'm going to let you introduce it. What are we talking about today?
We are talking about the incredible, no rhymes in it whatsoever, my favorite show of the last decade and maybe ever, Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812.
There's a war going on out there somewhere, and Andre isn't here. There's a war going on.
Natasha Pierre and the Grey Comet of 1812 is a sung-through musical adaptation of a 70-page segment of from Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace, written by composer and lyricist Dave Malloy and directed by the incredible Tony-winning Rachel Chavkin. Not for this show, though. Well. It's based on Volume 2, Part 5 of Tolstoy's novel War and Peace, focusing on Natasha's affair with Anatole and Pierre's search for meaning in his life. It was developed in the Ars Nova Theater in 2012, followed by a 2013 stagings in both the Meatpacking District and the Theater District of Manhattan. It premiered on Broadway in November at 2016 at the Imperial Theater and subsequently closed in September of 2017 after winning not that many Tonys. So, yes, and we'll get into that a little bit later. So what did you guys both think of Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812? I'm going to start with Andrew because I think we got a little sneak peek at what Angelina thought. But Andrew, you just watched this for the first time.
Oh, yes. And I would highly recommend seeing it live if possible. I mean, I don't know if that's possible anymore.
It's playing in Japan. So if you're in Japan,
Japan, go and see that. Because trying to watch this with no idea what is happening was a nightmare for me. I had to listen to the cast recording about 9 times while reading the Wikipedia articles to figure out what the hell was going on. Music-wise, though, it's fantastic. All the music is very creative, and there's a lot of different styles, which I really liked. And I don't think there was any song that I didn't like, and there was a couple songs that I really, really enjoyed. So I think it's good, but holy hell was I confused.
I absolutely adore The Great Comet of 1812. To the point where I'm like, you know, I'm just like 5 beers away from getting a Great Comet tattoo at any given point. It's one of my favorite shows that I've seen. It was kind of one of those things that rekindled my love in theater after kind of being on a musical theater dry spell for a while. And I think about it, I listen to it, like, at least once a week. This love has not died. I don't know if this is the time to talk about it, but like, I had read War and Peace when I was in college. That's not a humble brag. I literally had no friends in college, so I was just kind of hanging out by myself. Figured I'd read War and Peace, and I had that context. It's a very long book. It's super long book.
It's a bit long, isn't it?
But I had that context kind of going into the show, but didn't know anything else about it besides like Josh Groban was in it when I saw it. So, and I have a longer story about my first time seeing it, but I can talk about that now. Or
let me get my thoughts, and then we'll talk about how we first were introduced to this show.
Oh, okay.
Except for Andrew.
Except for me, because we all know how I was introduced. Jess sent me a link and forced me to watch it.
That's the premise of the show.
Listen to the recordings. Don't watch the YouTube version.
Yeah.
I guess it's no secret that I love this show, considering like more than one of our guests has been like actors and performers and behind the scenes folk from the show. It is obviously one of the most advantageous Broadway shows, at least within the last 20 years. There's nothing that I can compare it to. Not even within Dave Malloy's own work is there anything this advantageous. Honestly, I discovered it very early on, I think all the way back when they released the first album, just because I troll through musical cast recordings, and whenever there's a new one, I download it immediately. And I didn't understand it the first 4 times I listened to it, much like everyone else in the world. But I was just drawn in, especially by that opening number. Like by the end of that first song, you are sold on that show.
Yeah, it really hits you in the ass. It's just like, oh, yeah. So when I first found it, awkward segue. I had first heard this show. I had heard of it like when I was doing its Ars Nova run, like just really, really offhand kind of knowledge. And I was like, oh, War and Peace musical, that's fun. And I remember it was 2017. And so very sad note, but like my dad passed away when I was younger. So for Father's Day, I always usually kind of do something for myself. And 2017, June, I was going to New York. I was determined to see a Broadway show. Dear Evan Hansen had just won the Tony. And I could not get tickets to that. And I knew Great Comet was there, had kind of wanted to see it, bought a ticket just solely based on that. I remember putting my like butt in that seat, my ass cheeks like pancaked, the show started. And I was like hooked within the thirst, like minute of it. I was like, this is it. I think I found my new favorite show. New favorite show.
That's surprising that you didn't know about it before the Tonys.
I mean, I had heard of it. Like, I'd seen Hamilton back in November, and they were doing, like, a fundraising for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS competition between that and Great Comet. And so, like, I knew, like, about Great Comet. I knew what it was. I knew it was, like, with Josh Groban. But I was kind of, I guess I should preface by that first story by saying I'd gone through, like, a really bad, kind of, like, low personal point in my life. And right as I was getting out of it was when I saw Great Comet. So I have a very, very strong affinity for it. In that sense. I mean, I'm very happy to joke and laugh about it, but it does have a very, like, very huge emotional pull for me, especially with, like, the theme of it, and about Pierre, like, kind of being able to look at this comet and find and feel joy, you know? I was like, oh, shit. I was sitting in the theater like, oh, shit. Ah, oh, shit. As, like, I got the feels. But, yeah.
I find that really, like, incredible, and I'm insanely jealous that you got to see this live, not just once, but multiple times.
Yeah, yeah, this is, like, the show where I saw it, and I saw it with the original Broadway cast, immediately got on my bus back to Philadelphia, and was like, I need to buy tickets for this again, I have a feeling this will probably close, because nothing I like ever runs for very long. I'm buying tickets for this again immediately. And, you know, my husband, who puts up with my whims, was like, yeah, I'll go and see it again with you. And I ended up seeing it 3 times in total before it closed in a very short amount of time. And I'm not paid money. I'll just leave it at that.
Now, let's go into the plot of what actually the show is about, because it isn't the entirety of War and Peace,
no.
But it still is equally as confusing and as character-loaded as War and Peace. So, just for comedy's sake, I'm going to force Andrew to tell me what the plot of this musical is.
Oh, fucking God. Okay, I would like to say that I think I understand the plot now.
Okay.
It took a lot of times, but I think I get it. Do I have to go through every character? Because there's no way I'm going to remember them
all. Give me the broad strokes.
Okay, like, the show can go through every character.
Yeah, the show goes through every character really fast, but I'm not able to sing it that quickly. Pierre is, like, a depressed guy in Russia in, 1812, I would assume. and then there's also Natasha, who is a person who's trying to marry a prince. I believe he's a prince.
Andre. Prince Andre.
Andre. Yes, and I believe that's a prince. And
he isn't here.
Yes, he's off at war, and he is also friends with Pierre.
Fun fact, in the book, he is not off at war. He is just kind of hiding.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. why? But okay. Yeah. And then Natasha meets someone named Anatole and cheats on Andre, kind of. There's like an affair of some sort. And then Pierre, like, kicks Anatole out of town, and yeah, and then the end of it, I think. But there's, like, a bunch of other stuff in the middle, but that's, like, how it ends.
Notice how Natasha and Pierre do not meet until that final scene. They do not have a single interaction until the very end of the show.
Yes, although that doesn't help with how confusing the show is.
I think you hit the nail on the head.
It's like when you that line from The Simpsons where it's like, when are they going to get to the fireworks factory?
When are they going to see the comet?
So there was a lot of audience participation elements added to the show, which makes it feel like the best part of theater. Angelina, I want you to kind of describe to me what kind of elements they did, because they gave out food and a bunch of other stuff. So just walk me through that.
They gave out pierogies and little like rhythmic shakers that were shaped like eggs. I think when they were originally doing it in the meatpacking district, they gave out vodka, which for very obvious reasons they couldn't do at the Imperial Theater. And the way that
they should have.
They should. Oh, man. Well, like, I think actually what it was now, like, they give out, like, or they gave out in the Broadway one plastic shot glasses of water that were supposed to look like vodka, but was regretfully not vodka.
Yuck. That's lame. That's really lame.
Yeah, and then, of course, the way the show is staged, the whole theater is essentially the stage, so you'd have cast members, like, talking to you, handing you like letters, or not talking to you, but like looking you in the eye. When I saw it the second time, I was sitting front row mezzanine, and there's a lot of action that happens in front row mezzanine. And like at one point, I had a sweaty Josh Groban, you know, 1 foot away from me, like just shaking his fat suit in my face, and it was just like it was one of those like surreal moments that you were like,
I wish that were me.
Well, the best part of it was like, obviously, he brought in a lot of non-Broadway people. He brought in a lot of, like, Josh Groban moms, is what I'll call them. And, oh, my God. Like, there's this, so part of the stage is in front of one of the balcony seats. And there's this one moment where he's standing and singing in front of this one woman in one of the balconies, or boxes, rather, I should say. And this woman was clearly there for Josh Groban. And, like, his butt's, like, eye level with her. And the spotlight's also on her because he's standing right there. And she's staring and, like, in her zone, man. And, like, it totally took everyone out of the audience with them. I mean, like, everyone was just like, look at this woman just thirsting real hard for Josh Groban.
Horning hard for the Josh Grobes. I doubt anyone did that for Dave Malloy when he hopped into the role.
Oh, you go on Tumblr, you'd be surprised.
That's fair.
It's not the same. There's not that mainstream appeal.
Yeah, it's not you raise me up, ass in my face.
Oh, man.
You raise my ass. But also, the audience becomes a character in a way. Like, they grab some people from the audience and make them characters in the story.
Yeah, like there's this wonderful great scene between Natasha and her would-be sister-in-law where they're kind of having this awkward meeting with each other, and it's right in the middle of one of the onstage seats. And then like Anatole flirts with people in the audience, and it's always super fun. It was just kind of different every, you know, show kind of thing.
All I could think of was with the with those seats is how much did they pay for those seats?
Oh, the same as every other seat. They're not
really.
They're not crazy expensive.
No, some of them were, but like there were like a couple of seats that are just like it was. I was looking at the seating chart later, and there was like one that was like $300 when I seen it, and of course it was probably a resale ticket too, but like it was like right where like dust and ashes happens, and I was like, oh, I want to be that person. But yeah, they were like $70 seats at the bar, but you also can't see shit at the bar, like that bar that was like running off the proscenium. As I discovered, you can't really see much there, so you know.
Look with your ears, not your eyes.
It has the most confusing seating chart I've ever looked at. Like, I'm like, I don't know where to sit.
Yeah, you're like, what's above?
Don't worry, Jess, you didn't have to.
I know. It was the saddest thing I never got to do. Can we now talk about the reason why Jess never got to sit on that stage and see that show? All right, here we go.
Oh, here's the juicy drama. I don't know the drama. You're gonna have to.
Okay. So let's just start with the Tony Awards, because that's basically where the tea spilled and then spilled onto some electric plugs that started a fire.
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone was expecting this show to do well at the Tonys. It was nominated for 14 Tonys, which was a crazy amount. Like, I think that was tied for some high award. So everyone thought, oh, this is going to sweep or at least do very well. It decidedly did not, and everything more or less went to Dear Evan Hansen, sadly. Which I'm not a fan of, and I have a lot of problematic issues with, of course.
Mistake!
But you can tell, by the time Great Comet performs, they are very aware that this is not going to be their night. And like they just kind of perform the hell out of what they do. And Josh Groban goes out and hugs Dave Malloy and brings him onto the stage with them. It's super emotional, super cathartic to watch, but also heartbreaking. And they basically knew that unless they get some star quality into that show, their days are numbered. So they do that. They bring in Ingrid Michaelson to play Sonia. They get a lot of celebrity credence in there. And then they bring in Oki Wright. Ona Doan, please tell me if I said that wrong.
Yeah, I just
They call him Oak, basically. But he's famous for playing Hercules Mulligan and James Madison in Hamilton. And he was supposed to start the role of Pierre on July 11th. And he was gonna do well. His performance was well received. I've saw bootlegs of it. He was absolutely incredible. He's a great Pierre, but he is not like the most bankable star in the world, especially compared to, say, Josh Groban. So on July 26, 2017, they announced that famous actor Mandy Patinkin is going to step in for Pierre, cutting Oak's Broadway run 3 weeks early. They did not alert Oak to this before the announcement went out. And he was like, that's a dick move. And Twitter was like, that's a real big dick move when you're kicking an African-American actor out of this role to replace him with a white guy. And with this, they started a campaign that was hashtag make room for Oak. And all the publicity that Great Comet had wanted all this time has finally come, and it's terrible publicity. Mandy Patinkin then backed out because he did not understand, like, hey, you did not tell me that I was kicking someone else out for this. This is not what actors do, understandably. And then Dave Malloy had to step in, and the show closed a little over a month later. This is the death knell for that show, and is the reason why Jess did not get to see the show in October like he was originally supposed to.
Jess, yeah. Would you have cared if you saw that famous actor playing?
No!
Like, say something about that casting, okay? Like, Pierre is not an old person. And I'm sorry, Mandy Patinkin, maybe this were 1984, but I'm just, like, you know, putting up someone who's pushing 70, you know, against a character that's basically a young woman ingenue. It's just, like, some shit. I get why they went for Mandy Patinkin, but I'm like, ugh.
I thought Pierre was supposed to be old.
Yeah, no, Pierre's older.
Kind of, he's an old soul. Basically.
Yeah.
I mean, in the book,
I feel like he says that he is old. I thought he was like an old person.
There's like a line like he's very fondly referred to as older, but like in the book, he's 26 at that point. And gotcha. Natasha's like 18. So yeah, he's like an old.
Well, Josh Groban does not look 26.
No, he does not. Josh Groban looks like he's hit a hard 50 in that show.
Yeah. That's about how old I thought he was.
Yeah. No, and it is, yeah, it's like there's some such of a line in, like, his opening number, Pierre, that it's just like, our most dear, most, there's something that calls him old, but he's not actually old. He's just kind of an old sad soul at that point in War and Peace. Everyone goes through, like, 8 million character changes in War and Peace. It's a long book. It's set over, like, 20 years.
It is.
And you're just getting, like, a very small slice of it, but, yeah. No, and like Mandy Patinkin versus like someone who's playing an 18-year-old ingenue is just like,
Was it worth killing the show over it though?
Well, the show was dying anyways, as Dave Malloy later said. Like, the show, we're not making money. We had to get someone big in there, or else we were gonna close anyway.
I'll just say it raised some very important issues with the Broadway casting, and I'll leave it at that.
It does. And both sides made good points, and I don't think either was ill-intentioned. I think a lot of mistakes were made, though.
Yeah, a lot of mistakes were made, and I'm very unfortunately, a fantastic show had to close before Jess could see it.
Yeah, tragic, tragic. Yeah. No one ever thought about asking me how I felt about a situation.
Yeah. They were all in a boardroom saying, like, well, Jess hasn't seen it. And they're like, I know, the bottom
fuck
line.
Em.
And they're like, fuck em. I'm so
they
sorry.
Have XX Jess World loaded up on their computer, and they're like, this guy hasn't seen it yet. Yeah, who cares?
There is one comment I would want to make about the Mandy Patinkin thing before we never bring it up ever again. I regret every day that I will never hear his version of Dust and Ashes.
Yeah. I just, in my head, it just sounds all like finishing the hat.
He would do it in very high. He'd be like, is this how I die? Yeah. In this Mandy Patinkin way.
Yeah.
It's like he was in the room with us.
He's like, and I'm sorry. Wake up now.
I want to wake up.
I'm ready. Love it.
Oh, we missed out, kids. All right, let's chill. Today's Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download the title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese to get started today. Today, I am suggesting a very light read. It's going to be a really easy book. It's War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy. Is narrated by Frederick Davidson. You can just get this out in the afternoon. It's a real easy read for like your
this young. This is one of those young adult novels, right? Like Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's just like Baltimore Star.
To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. Again, that's audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese for your free audiobook.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
All right, folks, let's get back to the real show.
This is all your program. You are at the opera. Gonna study up a little bit if you want to keep with the plot. Because it's a complicated Russian novel. Everyone's got 9 different names. So look it up in your program. We'd appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Da-da-da.
All right, let's talk about the prologue, because this is like one of the most incredible opening numbers of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
Angelina, tell me what it's like to see it on stage and just your thoughts on that opening number.
So yeah, going in not knowing anything about it, but also being a fan of War and Peace, like when you kind of catch on to what the conceit of the song is, and you're kind of like, this is fantastic, because it's literally just like, hey, you dum-dums, we know you haven't read War and Peace. We're going to make this really easy for you so we can get to the fun stuff, which I really appreciate. I love that in any piece of media where they're like, let's get the hard stuff out of the way and get to what's really interesting about the characters. But basically, they're just going down. It's like a 12 Days of Christmas of angry Russian nobles, essentially, where everyone's kind of introduced and given like one real defining character trait about them. And that's kind of like your handy Pokédex of navigating War and Peace.
Exactly. And they also give you a Pokédex, a literal Pokédex in the audience, don't they?
Yeah. It's like, number one, Pierre, he's a psychic type. Ooh.
And if you actually look at Dave Malloy's like Spotify, he has like a list of song inspirations for each song within the show. And like 12 Days of Christmas is definitely among many other songs in here. And in the very, very early productions of this, the song did not exist and they just started with the song Pierre.
I cannot imagine.
Rachel Chavkin basically said, no one understands what's going on in this show, so write something that explains something. So he's like, all right, shitheads, here's what we got. Just spelling it out for you.
Being one of the dum-dums, I do appreciate it, but it wasn't enough.
You were too much of a dum-dum.
I'm too dum-dum.
Oh, we accounted for dum-dum, but not too dum-dum. Oh, no.
Take the tempo down a little bit and maybe I'll understand. Can we play this in slow motion?
But not only does it like tell like each character, it also sets up the tone perfectly. Like, yeah, we're going to break the fourth wall. We might talk to you. We might interact with you. It's going to be big. It's going to be bombastic. Get ready, folks.
I think it's like that, the opening of Cats, if it weren't people dressed in leotards and you didn't have to understand what a fucking Jellicle cat was. But rather, you know.
Well, you can't understand what a Jellicle cat is. It doesn't exist. as far as I'm aware.
Oh, how dare you?
Sir, you are talking to Angelical right now.
We're all Angelical Russians. We're all Angelical Russians.
Because Russians can. Yeah.
Natasha, are you going to go to the Jellicle Ball?
Yeah. I don't know if you know this, but Great Comet ends with Natasha getting on the comet as it rises up from the stage. Just like an
memory.
So oh, when day's hustle and bustle is done, Anatole's work has just begun.
So this show is just, now that you put it that way, it all makes sense. Yeah. It's just cats.
Yeah, it's just cats. It's a bunch of Russian nobles. I think Dave Malloy
would actively get mad at us for saying it's just cats.
It's just cats, but with Russians.
Yeah, it's cats set in Russia in, you know, 1812. Something
about that. That's a plot.
Yeah, that's a plot. You know what Tolstoy was like? I really like the show Cats. How can I make this into my own thing?
And then he went a little bit revisionist with it. Just a little bit.
A little bit. He's like, oh, Cats is an IP now because, you know, really useful group, trademarks, everything. I'm just going to, like, do a fine replace of Monkestrap's name with Pierre. And we're good.
Anatole is just Rum Tum Tugger.
You're right. Oh, my God.
Natasha does have, like, a Grisabella fall from grace.
Yeah,
oh,
she
my
does.
God. It's just Cats, guys.
Or is it a Cats
War
prequel?
War and Peace. War and Peace is just Cats.
Oh. Oh my gosh, Balaga is Skimbleshanks the Railway Cat.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, it all lines up. If this were a video, you'd have to cut to that shot from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia of like the of corkboard with like all the connecting files and like
It's just cats, guys. It's just cats. It's just cats.
Damon Lloyd, we figured it out. Tell us right now, and we won't tell anyone else. Give us some money, and we won't reveal your secrets.
I was reading this book, War and Peace. It's just cats. Oh, it's just cats. All of it.
You pull off, like, Dave Malloy's face, and it's actually Old Deuteronomy, and you're like, what the fuck?
Okay, I like the prologue. It's a very fun song, and I like that they try to explain it, because they realize that the show is really fucking confusing.
Yeah.
I just wish that I had the little Pokedex card that explains everything else to me when I'm in the show, because once you get through, like, four different songs, I forget everything they said in the prologue, and it's, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
There's a Maria and a Mary.
I remember who the crazy guy was, but we're past the crazy guy.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm lost.
But Andre is also Andre's father? What?
Not only is Great Comet Cats, but it's also Psycho, where it turns out that he is his mother. And has killed everyone.
You empty and stupid, pretend to fellows, satisfied with your place.
All right, let's move on to Pierre.
Pierre is like that song. It's like the poem or like the live journal entry you write when you're like a junior and you're convinced of your own brilliance. And you're like, oh, I pity those sheeple that are listening to Britney Spears. I listen to Avril Lavigne.
Yeah. So I mean, he basically says that when he says, I'm staring at my screen, which is a real anachronism, but it somehow fits.
It works somehow. When I first saw it, I thought he said hours at my screed, which also works, but I like the hours at my screen. I like to think that, like, Pierre's like a time traveler who has seen it all. He has seen the horrors of Twitter and has come back to 19th century Russia because, wow.
We used to be better. We used to be better. We used to be better.
We were never better. Come on.
Yeah, it's like this like great like wood like I'm talking like I have a music theory background when I don't, but it's like what, an E minor, and it's just angsty and
it's an E double sharp
with some EDM thrown in.
Yeah, it's got a nice chocolatey overnote to it. I love that song because it's kind of like there's the show itself is so bonkers that like Pierre's narrative really is kind of what grounds it and gives it a bit more of a philosophical bent. So I love this number, and I love how it kind of gets inverted musically at the end of the show, but we'll get to that later.
I think this is a great I want song without ever saying I want. He has very vague ideas of what he really needs, and it sets him up strangely as our main character as opposed to Natasha. And I'm going to talk about musical theater structure, where the opening number is just like setting up the world. The second number should always be your I want song, or at least there are exceptions that prove the rule. But more or less, that is how it works. And Natasha doesn't have her I want song for another four songs. Crazy to me that they are decidedly saying Pierre's the main character, folks.
Yeah. Even though you don't see.
Well, he's a more interesting main character, I think.
I think she deals with more. I 100% think that it's her story, but
does deal with more, but Pierre is more interesting. He's a more interesting person. His arc is more interesting.
This is like a late night five bottles of wine kind of conversation here. Cuz like about like internal versus external characters and like what you kind of gravitate to. Natasha is a very, especially at this point in the show, very external person. A lot of her kind of internal growth happens after this point, like after where Great Comet cuts off. So you are kind of like flying blind into like, what the fuck is this girl doing? There's also like a lot of missing context about Andre in the show that I think if I had one nitpicky criticism, I would have added in, which is like Andre's kind of trying to avoid committing. And Natasha is young and kind of gets that vibe, but can't really put it, I couldn't put a name to that vibe, you know? So yeah. But like Natasha's definitely like the external character appears kind of a lot more philosophical in nature. And so I kind of get it. Like philosophically, the show kind of lies with him.
In film school, they taught me the difference between a plot and story. And I think Natasha and Pierre represent both in different ways. Natasha represents plot, meaning things happen to her, whereas Pierre represents story, where he is the thematic arc of the tale. That is where I think the difference is, where we think that Pierre is more introspective and emotional, where Natasha, in the original production with Philippa Sue, I feel like she doesn't have much agency because of how kind of wide-eyed and doe-eyed the way that Philippa Sue played it, which is quite like the book, but I think that Danae Benton really adds this like kind intelligence to the character that wasn't there previously that makes me find her more interesting, in all honesty.
The snow in the moonlight and your childlike eyes and your distant smile, I'll never be this happy again.
Let's talk about no one else.
Nobody else but you.
So, Angelina, you love this song.
You know, I had the opening number happen, and I was like, holy shit, I love this. And then No One Else happened, and for me, it was just one of the most... You know, you get all these ingenue songs in the beginning of first acts, and usually they're just, like, pretty straightforward, hopeful, but there's, like, just such a hint of sadness and of what's to come in that number, and just it just killed me. I sang that song to my daughter every day while I was pregnant with her, and it's just like it's one of my I just love how the foreshadowing of like things will not be as Natasha expects, and even after the show, like she'll never be that happy again. There's this line like, I'll never be this happy again, as she sings about Principal Konski, who she's engaged to and you know, things she's so in love with. And yeah, yeah, she even says at that point, like, I'll never be this happy again. And it, to me, that is just like such a, it hurts my heart. It hurts my heart.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way. And this is the first time, like, you can really see how good Dave Malloy is at translating, like, written text to, like, song and making it sing. Like, first time I heard your voice, Moonlight Burst in the Room, is basically taken from Tolstoy directly. And the quote was, moonlight as if it has been watching at the window a long time, waiting for that burst into the room. Like, that, that's such a brilliant way to take the truth and make it rhyme, as, like, yeah, a lot of people try to make it say.
Yeah, like, there's, I think it's, like, worth noting that, like, most of Great Comet is, if not verbatim, pretty directly taken from Tolstoy's writing. And I think I love that Dave Malloy trusts in how good Tolstoy's writing is and uses his music to just kind of like bring it to like this next level that only like musical theater could really do. Like with the finale of the show, it's just, I could gush forever about how much Dave Malloy lets the text lead, but also adds, you know, who Dave Malloy is musically to it. And it's just, I'm like having a nosebleed right now. It's so good.
Andrew, what did you think of this song?
No One Else?
Yeah.
This is the number where you actually get to know who Natasha is, which is nice, since she was in two other songs before this. yeah, I mean, I like it. I think I, as a song setting up a character, I think I liked Pierre better, but that's me, I guess. I don't know.
Well, this sets up her story a lot better. Like, it sets up the plot and her introspective beliefs, because it shows, yes, like, her deep emotional connection to Andre, and it sets up a lot of themes, like,
yes,
musical themes that we're going to see later.
Yes, it's very good.
It's a gorgeous song, and the staging of it is just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, the flashbacks to Andre and the use of snow, the spotlights.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it hurts my heart to watch. Like, it's so gorgeous.
Man, I wish I got to see that stuff.
It's, yeah, that it's like just so cinematic and wonderful. Like, Rachel, this is where, like, that moment where I was like, Rachel Shopkin is God, because that moment where she just sees Andre, you know, miles away with the snow coming down.
I bet you it's better live than it was in that crappy recording.
Oh, you mean like some guy named Dave from Idaho recording it on his iPhone didn't give you the full experience?
So, like, a lot of my experience with this show is just purely from the music alone, listening to the cast recordings. So this one's not, it didn't really stand out that much to me as far as just music.
Sure.
So it was good. I don't think there's any song in the show I didn't like, but yeah, this one was good though.
Can I just comment on Danae Benton's performance of this, where she, I don't like when just girls that know how to belt just belt an entire song.
Yeah.
She chooses the quiet moments so intelligently.
Yeah.
Like, when she turns to just like, and nobody knows, just you and me, it's our secret. Yeah. She like says that so quietly and then turns to a member of an audience and they just beam at her with that same like bursting smile that I would have if I was in that audience.
Yeah, like I was just smiling that whole number. You, but also sad and having a nosebleed again.
And it has like very thoughtful, like the ending of it is not concrete in any way. It's just like he's, maybe he'll come today, maybe he came already and he's sitting in the drawing room and I simply forgot.
Yeah.
Like, that feels childlike but not unintelligent.
Yeah, I mean that's also Tolstoy's writing again, and I love again that Dave trusts in the text so much, and it's beautiful. Beautiful.
They say we are asleep until we fall in love. We are children of dust and ashes.
Let's move to Dust and Ashes.
Oh, ugh. I turn to a grandma at this song. Like, I'm just like, oh, isn't that sweet? Oh, oh my God.
I think I like the idea of the song the best as far as like lyric quality and what the song's about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I find it funny because this was the last song written for the show. Right. Like in the original album, this song did not exist. It was written especially for Josh Groban.
Yeah. And that, as someone who didn't come to the show until the Broadway version, that kind of blows my mind. Like Dust and Ashes feels so central to
necessary.
Yeah. Driving the show. That no offense, I can't see, I'm sure Great Comet was incredible of an experience off Broadway, but I can't imagine the show without that song.
So what would even happen? You just have the duel and then it just, that's it?
Yep. They just move on to the next scene, which I believe was just Natasha waking up the next morning.
That would have just been so lame.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh, well, here's a duel. You failed. Now let's go to Natasha's bedroom where she just wants to go shopping.
Yeah. That's the obvious conclusion of that scene.
You know,
I'm not gonna lie, it's baffling because I fell in love with the show before this song existed, and quite often when new things are added to a show that you already love, you're not a big fan of it. But this is like, okay, that's in, come on, bring it in with the rest of it, it works.
Like I always have to wonder what it was like, you know, hearing that song for the first time is like someone who loved the show. Is it like back in like 2004 when I have to listen to No One Would Listen, which was written for Finn? Like, I imagine...
You mean the classic Gerard Butler bop?
Yes. Just, you know, it's a sad Saturday night. I'm going to put on No One Would Listen and cry my sorrows away. Yeah, I imagine that listening to Dust and Ashes as a fan of Great Comet before the Broadway run was the same experience as listening to No One Would Listen right before the 2004 Phantom came out. Same exact experience. But yeah, that was a, oh my gosh. You know, it's a goosebumps moment on the cast recording, but when you see that like live in person, when it gets to that a cappella moment towards the end where the music cuts out, it is just like, so like I had mentioned that I had seen the show after a really bad time in my life. And the one of that big line is like, I'm so ready to wake up now. And it just, oh, when the tempo picks up, I remember being like, oh fuck, I've been read for filth. This show has seen me. And also Josh Groban singing in a fat suit. Da-da.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the takeaway. But yeah, just such an incredible song. One of those things that I'm mad that most karaoke places, by most I mean all karaoke places, don't have it. Because everyone would want to listen to me.
I would do great karaoke of this very, very drunk. Yeah.
I am sorry. I wake up now.
Wake up now.
I don't deserve life for that. But I love how there's like three sections to this song. Like, it's like a mini story in its own. Like, there's multiple realizations within it, and the music reflects that. It's just such a wild song. Because I remember as I was sitting in the theater watching it, being like, okay, this is like the Josh Groban ballad, and it kind of starts out that way, and then it like slides into like this great klezmer kind of feel that changes, like, oh, so good. Yeah, I love it. Anyway, I keep saying that, but you get my vibe.
I know you so well, my friend. I know you might just throw yourself over, but I won't let you. I won't let you. It's all on me.
How about we talk about Sonia Alone?
So good. It's like that. Sonya's like one of my favorite characters in War and Peace, and I, there's like such a great pathos to her because she's the character that just like never gets what she wants in throughout the book, like gets nothing and is just selfless for better or worse, you know, never to her betterment. So to me, like, it's like such a good devotion song to a friend when you know that they're gonna fuck up really badly. Like when your friend's like, yeah, I'm gonna get like a dick tattooed on my arm because I'm really drunk. You're like, no, don't do that. Oh, don't do that. Sonya alone is that song.
I think it's the female equivalent of Michael in the Bathroom for Be More Chill, and a much better version of that song in all honesty.
Agree with that. Yeah.
It's a platonic friend song.
I mean, it's the same. It's the same exact like sentiment.
I love it. Like, a lot of it's just kind of Britton
Ashford,
just like kind of, you know, very particular voice, like,
specific.
I will protect your name in your heart. It's just like, it sounds like I'm mocking her, but it's just, it's so singular and wonderful that like I never saw Ingrid Nicholson in the role. Yeah, but to me, that's like,
she sounds very much like she's doing a Britton Ashford impression.
Oh,
if then it's weird. Yeah. I think it's like almost written in a way like somehow like Jean Valjean and Les Mis. Every Jean Valjean is doing a Colm Wilkinson impression somehow.
I'm reaching for a frog and the night is close. Yeah, like you can never not have a little bit of Colm Wilkinson in a role. You can never not have a little bit of Britton Ashford in Sonya Alone. Love it though. So good. Of course.
I do love it. I want to sing this one day just because it's like little... It would be very easy for me to sing without trouble.
Today's that day, Jess.
I think it earnestly has like the most like do it now.
You shameless good for nothing, you vile shameless girl. In my house, a nice girl, very nice. You dirty, nasty wench of a thing. Now don't you say one word. In my house, horrid girl, hussy. It's lucky for him he escaped, but I'll find him. Now you listen to me when I speak to you. Now you listen to me when I speak to you. In my house, do you hear what I'm saying or not?
Natasha's already shook with noiseless convulsive sobs. Mari touched her hand to her face.
Don't touch me, let me be. What is it to me? I shall die.
What are we to tell your father?
We have to talk about In My House, and I'm just lumping that together with A Call of Pierre, because they are continuations of each other, more or less. Maria Dmitrievna shoves your tongue up your ass, basically.
Grace McLean. It's like the ultimate, like, if you were a bitter alto in high school who never got, like, a role in shows. I don't speak from experience or anything like that. This song is just kind of like a convergence of everything you would ever want in, like, a mezzo, like, character. It's just like, In my house, and it's just like, it's screamy, it's shouty. Again, the other song in the show where I'm like, how the fuck did Dear Evan Hansen win Best Orchestrations over this? There's so much wild shit going on in it. Same with The Call to Pierre. It's just like, they slap.
Mm-hmm.
As the kids say.
Mm-hmm. And A Call to Pierre was originally going to be a lot more old-fashioned and slow, but then they're like, this is boring. Just make it sound cool and weird.
I love that. There's like a great, like, kind of like almost operatic, but it's almost knowingly silly, like, what? Series of what's in that song? Where, like,
what?
Like, Maria's like listing all of the bad things that Natasha's gotten up to, and Pierre just like keeps reacting with bigger and bigger disbelief, like, what? It is so corny, but knows that it is, and it's just like, oh, fucking pour it on my face. I love it.
Andrew, what'd you think of these songs?
In My House, I really liked A Call to Pierre. The what thing is funny, as you guys said. I mean, I think you guys are covering it pretty fucking well. I will say In My House, the yelling part is awesome, which is like the whole thing. But
she gets like total mom voice and that, which is like, now you listen to me when I speak to you. And I'm like, oh fuck, what did I do? Just listening to it.
It's the way she goes from like a whisper to a scream, like throughout it. It's like very calm but very tense, and like your body is on the wall, leaving an imprint like Wile E. Coyote because she's screaming so
like,
loud.
Mom, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that crayons were hard to get off the wall. I'm so sorry, Mom. The Cole Pierre has my favorite, like, I'm in a car singing this to myself line in it. And it's, Florida is a married man, you know. It's just, I wish I could hear Colm Wilkinson sing that, or Mandy Patinkin for that matter.
Because Anatole is a married man!
That's a really good Mandy Patinkin. But yeah.
The one line I say, like, naturally, just to, like, my friends now without context is, like, and all will be ruined.
Just so you know, all will be ruined, guys. Love it. And just, like, go and listen to the cello on that. On those two songs and the woodwinds. Jeez,
just
on
listen
it.
To this
yeah,
fucking musical.
Yeah, just listen musical. To the fucking Great Comet. What the fuck are you doing? Why are you go listen to that?
I also like that Pierre is finally brought yeah. into the story again.
Finally, but he's on stage the yeah. entire time.
Yeah, he's just actually yeah. does something now.
He might as well be playing on his phone yeah. the entire time, but yeah. he's there.
He is so Candy Crush, man.
Pierre feels like the easiest role on Broadway.
Oh,
I'd
yeah,
love
you
that.
Just sit.
And sing really, really well.
I don't know about that. Dave Malloy played him, like, for most of the run. And he is a lot of things, but a fantastic singer is not particularly
he's
one of them.
His own
yeah, but Josh Groban.
We all can't have the dulcet tones of Josh Groban.
Don't speak to me like that. I am not worth it.
Stop. 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 You have your whole life before you.
Before me. No, all is over for me.
All over. If I were not myself, but the brightest, handsomest, best man on earth, and if I were free, I would get down on my knees this minute and ask you for your hand and for your love.
Let's talk about Pierre and Natasha.
So good. Again.
Okay. I loved Pierre and Natasha because it's basically just the same piano riff throughout yeah. the entire thing.
It's really like an actor song because it's the same piano riff and it's just straight up. It is literally straight up the dialogue and the describing action from War and Peace. And all of that really just rests in the heart of the performers and the chemistry that these two people have with each other when they haven't interacted with each other the entire show. I saw it with Josh Groban and Danae Benton, and I saw it with Dave Malloy and Danae Benton, and both times, or all three times I saw it, it just, oh, you could hear a pin drop in the theater throughout the entire thing. So it's, which is really impressive because it's a quiet song. It's just the same, you know, riff repeating over and over again, but like I didn't breathe every single time I saw it. And so it's just like, you know, Natasha's basically hit like her lowest point. She's, you know, had a failed suicide attempt and has disgraced herself. And Andre goes up to his bro Pierre and is like, yo, go tell Natasha off, bro. And Pierre's like, sure. And then he gets there and it's just overwhelmed with so much feeling for Natasha that, you know, he can't be a dick to her, and it's so beautiful.
And it has one line that makes me want to sob my eyes out every time I hear it. I think Dave Malloy delivers this a little better than Josh Groban, but I think you know what I'm talking about. It's, myself. If I were not myself, but the brightest, handsomest, best man on earth, and if I were free, I would get down on one knee this minute and ask you for your hand and for your love. And
yeah, it's the only talking in the show. It's the only actually spoken dialogue.
It's a moment of silence. Yeah. It's the only silence yeah. in the show, basically.
And again, like just like the energy in the room at that point is just so it's everything you've just even without having seen these two characters interact together, you're like, this feels right. Like it's kind of like miraculous that you pull that off, you know, with two characters who haven't spoken to each other and yet you buy this intense surge of emotion and love and empathy. I don't have anything really funny to say about this besides on the way home. After I saw it, I had had multiple servings of wine the first time, and I went on a bus immediately afterwards and downloaded the cast recording and just listened to it and cried the whole way home. So I feel really sorry for the 45-year-old man that was sitting next to me for that horrible bus ride.
Ooh.
All over for me. Yeah. So good.
There's a war going on out there
it's
somewhere.
In my heart, it's in me. The war was in me the whole time.
The war was the friends we made along the way.
The war was the people we made along the way.
Very true.
But just so good. I know I keep saying that, but really, it's a fucking great show. I don't have anything really terribly funny to say about this number. It's just incredibly...
It seems to me that this comet feels me, feels my softened and uplifted soul.
Okay, let's move to a hilarious number, The Great Comet of 1812. Andrew, I'm gonna let you start with this one.
This is really good song. I love it. I don't really have much to say. Everything's so fucking good. The way that they end it with the title of the show,
wow.
And oof, it's just fucking listen to it. What the hell are you listening to me for? Like, Christ almighty.
No, it was not of 1812. Damn it. It doesn't.
If you're listening to really any good song that will get you into it, I recommend
this
one.
This is the song that I give to people when I'm like, hey, you want to hear a song from the show that's great? I love this song because I like that the show feels, you know, empowered to end on an immensely quiet internal note as opposed to be like big finale of the show. It's instead like this very quiet but powerful emotional catharsis, and it's just like the lights get dimmer and it's just, you know, Josh Groban emoting to the void, but it works really well. I couldn't like see through my tears the first time I saw it. I was like, oh fuck, I'm crying. It does have one of my favorite jokes in the whole show where, you know, Pierce just left Natasha's house and he can't put on his coat. You can't find the sleeves. Yeah, and you're like, it, like that line always got like the biggest laugh. One of the biggest laughs, because it's just like one intense moment that needed like kind of like the pressure to be let off, and then it goes right into another like, oh my god, existential moment. And you're like, well, fuck me. But yeah, I love this number. I listen to this number all the time.
It's so do I. I can't ever skip it if it comes up on my shuffle. And it begins with a D major chord, which is the same chord that starts Pierre, tying his story to the beginning and the end.
Wow.
And it's so wonderful and quiet. I remember when that show ended and the lights went down, the Josh Groban mom behind me was like, is that it? And I was like...
is that it? Was that the end?
Where was the dancing girls?
Where's all the girls? I was looking for elephants. Where were the elephants?
Okay, Cersei, shut up.
I was told there was going to be a comet in the show. I got a chandelier. There was no 10-year-old girl singing to a dog, which is how I judge every Broadway show that I see. So it wasn't Annie, and was that it? Yeah.
The logo of it looks kind of like the Muppet Show, though.
So Great Comet isn't just cats, but it's also the Muppet Show.
Okay, so if this was a Muppet version, if Josh Groban would be Pierre, who would be Natasha?
Miss Piggy.
Miss Piggy Miss Piggy, and Andre would be Kermit?
No. We all know that Anatole would be Kermit.
No, that's not okay.
No, only because now I must go off to Petersburg.
Look, all I know is that Balaga is sweet. All right. And if you got a problem with that, you can step the fuck off.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
And Bolkonski is animal. Bolkonski is animal. I can see this working.
It's time to watch the comic.
All right, guys. The Great Muppet Show of 1812.
I think this should be a new recurring segment on our show. How would we Muppetize this musical?
It seems as though it already is.
It's time to make the war now. It's time to find some peace.
Guys, it's time to do some trivia.
All right, we'll do a 1v1. Whoever fucking answers the question right wins.
Okay.
And if you both answer it right, then we'll do a bonus round.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, so first question: the consistent understudy for Pierre throughout every run of the show's life.
Is it Scott Stangbert?
I think you said Stangbert, which is fine.
I'll give it to her. She knew the answer.
That's his twin. That's his twin. It's fine. She knew.
Ask him if that's the correct answer. I think he feels differently. But yeah. Okay. Cool.
Okay. Jess, here's the question.
Okay.
To play the role of Pierre, Josh Groban actually had to learn the accordion, which he did not know before. What was the very common Russian name of the accordion he took with him to practice on while on his concert tour?
I don't know. I know I've watched it where he said I named her something, and I don't remember it.
Ah, Jess, that's so sad. You're giving up your crown here.
I am.
But the name is Olga.
Yes.
Olga.
Well, Angelina now owns this podcast, and I am resigning.
I hope everyone likes 30 hours of me talking about cats.
They do.
Yeah, they really do.
It's a curious cat.
It's true, he is.
That's his only characteristic.
Well, he also
that's the only characteristic he has. He is a curious cat.
Well, he will do as he do-dos, which is my favorite line in any show ever.
You know who else do-dos as he do-dos? Audible. Today's show is brought to you by Audible.
Kill yourself, Jess.
Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs, download a title free, and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/musicalswithcheese. Well, that was a lot of fun, you guys. I'm going to let you guys talk about your overall thoughts on Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812 and your cheese ratings.
I'll go first because I have probably not as much to say. Sadly, I didn't get to see this show 3 times live. So I don't have as strong of an opinion about it. I think the music in it is absolutely fantastic and super original. And I don't usually say original as a compliment, but with this, I've never really heard anything like it. So yeah, it's great. the story is a little hard to follow, but it doesn't really matter that much because the music is so good that you could just kind of listen to it anyways. And then as far as a cheese rating goes, I am probably just going to give it a Russian cheese of some kind. So I will go with whatever Jess goes with, because I'm sure he has a great answer.
All right. Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812 is a musical I hold very dear to my heart. I love it so much. I will never turn down a chance to listen to that album because it is a ride from beginning to end. There is not a single dull moment in it. There's not one thing I would change about it. It is the definition of a perfect thing. And I am very glad it exists. I am sad I never got to see it live, despite me almost getting to. Thanks, Mandy Patinkin! But it is incredible, and everyone involved is, so far, like, we've interacted with them. They're all genuinely wonderful human beings, too. So that also makes me very happy. I will give this Tilsit cheese, which is from Russia. Selfstick.
As I said, guys, great pick, Jess. That's what I'm going with as well.
All right. Angelina, give us your overall thoughts and your cheese rating.
I think Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812 is one of the most innovative, passion-driven pieces of art to have hit Broadway in the last 20 years. Not only as an original work is it incredible, but it's also a wonderful example of how adaptation doesn't have to be like, you know, Shrek the Musical, where it's hyper-literal and just doing it for the sake of doing it. It is an adaptation made of love. The music is unlike anything else I've ever heard. Everyone involved with it is just magical and talented. It's literally a show that has kind of defined my 30s for me. Please go listen to it. Just do yourself a favor. Even if it's confusing, you'll be happy and confused. My cheese rating is some sort of a Roquefort or Stilton. You know, it's a little funky and weird. It's not the kind of thing I think that most people would originally go out for on a cheese plate, but it grows on you, and once you have experienced it, nothing else really tastes the same.
Angelina, I know you do a lot of things, but I want you to shill it out there for the world so everyone can find you, because you're incredible.
You guys are incredible. I had so much fun. So I am, as we mentioned earlier, I'm co-writer and co-editor for Lindsay Ellis. We will be having a video on Game of Thrones coming out this week. So if you just Google Lindsay Ellis, you'll get her YouTube channel and you'll see it. I also do improv musical comedy at Philadelphia Improv Theater with the musical team Thank You Places. We do an hour-long musical made up on the spot. It's every Saturday night at 8 p.m. and it kicks ass. That's all I got.
Quick, think of a musical right now that is about Russia, but not Great Comet.
This is Cats in Russia.
Right now on the spot.
This is Cats in Russia. We don't fly up on a tiger. We fly up on a Yugo. Yeah, there you go. That's all I got.
We're all Russian cats. We're all Russian cats.
Thank you guys for listening. This was a great show. We hope you guys will keep listening. Since we know you have your phone in your hand right now, why don't you just hop onto iTunes and just give us a review? Give us 5 stars. Tell us how awesome we are, or tell us how terrible we are.
Just straight into it.
Just tell us. Also, find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and all other podcast formats, including iHeartRadio, which is a weird one, at Musicals with Cheese. We're on Twitter at Cheesy Musicals. Give us some money on Patreon, Musicals with Cheese. We're going to have a bunch of commentaries this summer. They're allowed to vote on what they want to commentary on. I saw that there's already a bunch of votes in. So come on, give us some money and you can be a part of the creation. We're going to be doing some more live streams. Some of them are patron only. Some of them you can join in, but you want to be in the patron only one. We're on Instagram at Musicals with Cheese. Our YouTube page is also Musicals with Cheese. Send us an email at musicaltheaterlives@gmail.com. We've been loosening up on the emails. Come on, tell us what you think, folks. Our title card is created by the amazing Jolene Casco. Her Instagram is at Jolene Casco. Andrew, plug your album.
Oh, yes. My band, Thanks, with an exclamation point, is now on, like, pretty much everything with a full EP of 7 songs. Give us a listen if you want to. I don't sing, thankfully. I'm on bass.
It's pretty neat. I like it a lot. All right. Do you guys have anything else you want to say before we wrap it on up?
Great Comet was robbed there.
Yeah, I would agree, considering now that I've listened to it and I've also listened to Dear Evan Hansen. Absolutely, it was robbed.
I'm going to say fuck you, Mandy Patinkin. And all right, we'll see you next time on Musicals with Cheese.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Suffs. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suffs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.